This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there and welcome to episode 46 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are trial lawyers focused in the areas of nursing home abuse and neglect in the state of Georgia, and we are your co-hosts. As this goes to air, it is November 27th, 2017. Fall leaves, autumn leaves everywhere.
Well, they're starting to go away. It was a couple weeks ago was, I think, the peak.
I disagree. I drove up to
Nashville, Tennessee.
Nope. I drove up to, well, kind of in a way. I drove up to Alachua.
Okay.
Alachua.
What do you, okay.
There's like a state park. Okay. Where you go and this is like, there's a huge gorge and you can see the leaves.
Amicalola?
Not Amicalola. This is a different one.
Tallulah Gorge?
Tallulah.
Yeah, Tallulah. No one would have ever deciphered what made-up word you just used in place of, for Tallulah. So you put together Amicalola and Tallulah and came up with Talicalola?
Correct, which is how the Native Americans came up with the name okay. in itself. So, right. Okay. So Danielle and I went up there, and I think due to global warming, this was just 2 weeks ago as we go to air, and probably 80% of the trees were still green with foliage.
Mm-hmm.
With foliage.
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 Well, the problem is that it happens quickly. They start the leaves start falling even while they're green because it's mid-November. Mm-hmm. And so when they start turning colors, doesn't mean that when they start turning colors, they're already shedding a lot of leaves. So you have to catch them right as they start turning colors because they don't stay golden as long as they used to, pony boy.
I mean, I'm...
stay golden, pony boy.
You know, that's... Actually, if Gene might be... I'm not going to promise this, but Gene might be able to show some footage of what I'm talking about where it's like, what a disappointment.
Yeah.
That there was no... It was all green.
Okay.
And if he does, it'll be right here. Okay.
Interesting.
We haven't done that before.
Amazing. Yeah.
Aside from that, a lot of good things going on. We have a very interesting podcast for today. This is going to be another one of those podcasts where we're just a hodgepodge of stories from around the country involving nursing home abuse and neglect. And this first one, it's kind of like a two-parter. This is going to be like cereal. Not cereal that you eat, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but it's going to be like the podcast that you love, where it's like one story leads into another.
Okay. That serial podcast.
Yeah. So this is a case of abuse and actually neglect that comes out of a city called Greenbrier, Arkansas. It's actually Greenbrier, Tennessee. It's very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Greenbrier, Arkansas. In April of 2008, Martha Bull, age 76, was admitted to a Greenbrier nursing home and rehab after a stroke and treatment for an abdominal abscess.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of the next 2 to 3 days, Martha complained of abdomen pain and exhibited changes to her mental status, including being visibly upset, having cool and clammy skin, being nauseated, such to the point that she could not participate in physical therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the nurses, and this is what's really strange to me, and you, in your experience as a CNA, you might be able to shed some light on this, but I haven't seen this in any of the cases that we've taken since we've been doing nursing home and neglect for years. But the nurses, to report this to the doctor, they did it via facsimile. And they're, over the course of a few hours, the nurses fax the doctor, hey, these are her signs and symptoms, okay? And the doctor faxed back, take this woman to the hospital because she's in dire need based on what you've described to me. But because of the location of the fax machine being in a closet and being the fact that it's a fax machine, I can't even get my phone to work. And they're relying on a fax machine to communicate with the doctor. No one got that fax to take the take the resident to the hospital, and she died that night. Mm-hmm. And she's been in this nursing home for less than a week. So the family sued the owner of the nursing home along with the nursing home. The owner's name is Michael Morton. Sued Michael Morton, the owner, along with several other facilities that he owns. Okay. And according to the lawsuit, and basically this to verdict, several of the entities named were basically shell entities created by Michael Morton, the owner, to fragment his business enterprises mm-hmm. and create insolvency to shelter cash and hide cash. Mm-hmm. The verdict against this nursing home and against Michael Morton was $5.2 million. This was in May of 2013 when the verdict came down. The judge that oversaw this was running for the Court of Appeals at the time. His name is Judge Michael Maggio. Mm-hmm. And so you have a verdict of $5.2 million in May of 2013 based on the facts that I just laid out for you. At some point after the $5.2 million, Judge Maggio reduced that to $1 million. Do mm-hmm. we have a reason why he might have done that?
Well, yeah, he got campaign contributions.
From who?
From whom? He got them from Morton.
That's correct.
So, yeah, which is why I don't understand in this article, they say that Maggio's attorney says that there's no quid pro quo. I don't know what the statutory definition of quid pro quo is, but if it means in legal terms, you know, this for that. How is that not quid pro quo?
That's what's funny to me in this whole thing is that this guy is not arguing that it didn't happen. He's basically just arguing it's not a crime under the wording of the law, which is one of those when you hear the word like he got out on a technicality.
Yeah.
He's trying to do the technicality.
Yeah.
So in other words, so this is what happened. So now this judge that's convicted of bribery, mm-hmm. okay, because he reduced the sentence or this verdict from $5.2 million to $1 million because he was getting on mm-hmm. on the side campaign contributions from the owner of this facility, was convicted of federal bribery charges. And in his plea agreement, Maggio said he lowered the judgment in exchange for thousands of dollars in contributions given indirectly by the nursing home. So he pled, originally he pled guilty. Mm-hmm. Now Maggio is saying, I only pled guilty because I was forced to by my terrible attorneys. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so he has a slick attorney now that's saying, based on the wording of the statute, because there's no quid pro quo, there can't be a crime. Mm-hmm. So he should be allowed to take thousands of dollars in contributions because the statute wasn't worded correctly, or it reduced the sentence because it wasn't worded correctly. And then again, he's saying another argument that his attorney is making and that he's making is that the federal statute does not have a sound basis under basically federal law, that this is a state matter. And so federalism, the concept of the federal government being separated from the state governments, should have some type of limit.
Yeah.
So this is a couple BS arguments that this judge is making. Yeah. And he was caught red-handed
yeah.
taking money from the owner of a nursing home to reduce a verdict.
Yeah. And understanding, he was his so there, it wasn't directly to him. It's not as though the nursing home owner went up to the judge and gave him $1,000. It's this money, he signed off on this money being delivered to political action committees, which then gave the money to this judge's campaign, which then happened to be the judge in this nursing home case who just happened to reduce this $2 million verdict down to $1
million. $5.2 million.
$5.2 million down to $1 million. This guy doesn't need to be a judge, clearly. And we talk about special interest all the time. The reason that certain special interests are more powerful than others is because of money. You know, I mean, we talked about me going to the Consumer Voice conference, you know, at the beginning of November. Consumer Voice is a special interest, but it's a special interest comprised of low wage advocates for.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, I would volunteer for the Nashville Green Party.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is, you know, it's like three old hippies. You know what I'm saying? A communist. You know, that's 23 years old, a graduate student,
yeah.
And me sitting in a room, and we're trying to fight some legislation in which it's being backed by the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
So the Chamber of Commerce is talking about, hey, how many millions of dollars are we going to write on this check to these different legislators? While we're talking about, hey, do you think that you could sell your old guitar that was signed by, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, or, you know, Janis Joplin, and have a bake sale. You know what I'm saying? So you're talking about, your will is exactly right. Like, where the money is generally, you know, where the bread is butter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to think about it. This guy had enough money to make significant donations to the Political Action Committee. And he did that because there are certain limitations on how much an individual can give as an individual to a candidate, but it's different for PACs or political action committees. So he donated to this political action committee, which then happened to be donating to this judge. So it could have been a lot of money, but money talks.
And this is if I can step on a soapbox. And actually, I'm borrowing this soapbox from former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. Mm. Sandra Day O'Connor is on a political advocacy mission to advocate for the abolishment of judges running for office. Mm-hmm. She does not think that judges should run for office. It should be similar to how the process works for the Supreme Court itself. Because when you have judges running for office, then you have all the same problems that come with the legislators. You're susceptible to bribes, just like in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You're susceptible to politics itself. I mean, because that's basically the point of the Constitution separating or making it where the judges aren't elected, they're appointed, is because, and appointed for life, is because they're separated from the politics.
Yeah.
Here, by having to run for the office, you're in the trenches of politics. So it makes it easier for political leanings to get in the way versus what the rule of law is.
Well, plus, I don't know that I would favor appointing state court judges, state versus federal, not state versus superior, but state level judges for life necessarily.
I'm not saying life either.
I'm with you.
For terms.
But it is absurd, and I don't mean anything by this to all of our non-attorney friends. It is absurd that the general public, who don't deal with cases on a daily basis, who are maybe not interested in the law or don't know what's going on in the law, cast votes for judges. Like, what could you, if you're a non-attorney, what could you possibly base your decision on?
Unless you've had your child run in with, like, some like, he was, like, caught in a crime or something, and the judge was really hard on him or something. Like,
Or you were a victim of a crime and you thought the judge is too soft. So your opinion's going to be very biased. It should be meritorious. Judges should be
particularly, and we're talking about trial judges. This is a court of appeals case where it's an appellate court. Like, that's even
higher.
We're talking about, like, you should sit in an ivory tower, essentially.
Absolutely. Like, your knowledge of the law should be expansive. It should be a meritocracy. It should be a meritocracy.
Another kind of point I want to take away from this, Will, is the issue of this owner of this nursing home had several different basically shell companies and then different actual corporations, LLCs, that were channeling money between the two. So one was basically leasing the grounds that the nursing home sat on.
Yeah.
Another one was owned the fixtures.
Yeah.
And so that way, if a family was injured and they wanted to sue this guy, you can't get blood from a turnip. So, like, they would have to sue the operator, which might have be purposely underfunded, so there'd be no money there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that in our cases a lot of times, and in other nursing home neglect attorneys across the country deal with this, where you basically have to shotgun blast your pleading.
Oh, yeah.
Where,
by pleading, he means the actual document that is the lawsuit. So the actual piece of paper that you file with the court, the lawsuit, on the top of that first page, list who the plaintiff is, list who the defendant is or the defendants are. And in our cases, because we only do nursing home neglect and abuse, our defendant list is always pretty long. And it gets whittled down because people will come and say, hey, you know, our LLC has nothing to do with this, or actually you met this LLC.
Right. So yeah. That's kind of my point is that, so if you can imagine, a lot of times how these places are set up, these nursing homes are set up, it'll be, you know, and I'm not trying to say, we'll just say this, ABC Properties LLC, ABC Rehab Center LLC, yeah. ABC Rehab Center and Friends LLC, like they're clear and all have the same registered agent, all have the, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
These are just purposefully confusing so that the public doesn't know who is actually responsible for the actions of the actual facility that your loved one is in.
Yeah. And they do a lot of shady stuff like that, and that's why you have to talk with somebody that's got experience in these, because they will hide behind every possible loophole they can.
Now look, I mentioned the Green Party, I mentioned, you know, the communist graduate students sitting in those Green Party meetings. We are not anti-capitalists.
No.
We are not anti-corporation.
No.
The concept, and we've addressed this a few times in this podcast, the concept of the corporation is, from a 40,000-foot view, is to promote
industry
is to promote commerce, okay?
Yeah.
And how you do that is somebody whose house, whose car, whose assets, whose family heirlooms are on the line is less likely to go out and do commerce.
Yeah.
So what we do is the state says, okay, you're allowed to organize a fictitious entity in which to put the good and the bad of this company such that if something happens, the creditors can only come after that company. I get that. We both get that. That's fantastic.
We actually own an LLC.
That's Shane right.
Smith is an LLC. It's a limited liability company. We support that 100%.
So the concept of limiting the liability of the owners from the creditors of the company is a privilege that is bestowed by the state. Okay? So that's a privilege. And privileges can be abused. And in these instances, and a lot of times, in a lot of our experiences, the owners of this are trying to basically get the runaround on this privilege. So they're going to underfund one corporation and keep all the money from that should go to that corporation to another one. So that's, you can only sue the one that has no money. These type of things. It's, you're putting a stress on the whole concept of it to begin with.
And understand that making a profit is not a problem with us either. And I think I've said this numerous times. It's a phrase that my dad used to use, and I love to use with juries, that pigs are cute, hogs get slaughtered. There's nothing wrong with making a profit. There's nothing wrong with having a business where you make money. Make a lot of money. Go ahead. But if you're a hog and you're just, you know, thinking about yourself and you're not, you know, giving your consumers adequate care, if you're not taking care of these patients and these residents. I at the conference that I went to, I had an ombudsman tell me that the nursing home industry is seeing record profits in the past year, and that they heard from one nursing home insider who was saying that 30% of their profit margins go to staffing. 30%. So where are the other 70% going? You know, I mean, if you're not spending that much money on staffing and things like this happen to this woman, you're being a hog. You're not just being a capitalist. And so that's what our problem is.
Yeah.
Do we have time to go to this other Arkansas case?
I believe that we do. So you're talking about the case from Little Rock with you go ahead. What's the
okay,
this is too gross for me.
This case really, really upsets me. So and I'm definitely want to read the name of this place. So if you hear of the name of this place, just let it remind you of this scenario. Capital Health and Rehabilitation Center in Little Rock, Arkansas. So another Arkansas case. It says that on the outside of this case, on the outside of this facility, it looks okay. It doesn't look that bad. But their Department of Health and Human Services, Arkansas's, did a investigation, and their report centers around two different residents. But the first one that they talk about is absolutely disturbing. And instead of building up the suspense, it is the survey found that the nursing home failed to ensure necessary care and services by failing to provide for hygiene and urinary catheter maintenance for one resident who had an indwelling catheter. According to the documents, nurses said they, maggots, were like growing inside of his penis. It's just gross, nasty. I'm not going to say it was a handful, but it was a lot. They were little. That is a nurse giving a report to the state.
Quote, now, verbatim.
And I want to point out two disturbing things. The first one is really obvious, that the state found that there were maggots going inside of a man's penis in a nursing home. The second one is that this nurse is talking about this incident as though she's not a nurse who's in charge of the care for this man. The first time that somebody even remotely suspected this, something should have done to completely curtail this from happening. And they go on to say that one of the nurses, another nurse said, yeah, the flies were real bad down there. We had fly swatters. I have killed a couple of flies in his room, and one was under the covers, but I didn't think anything about that. There is just absolutely no excuse for that nonsense. First of all, there should never, ever be a scenario where an individual is allowed to develop an infection in their penis with a Foley catheter, with an indwelling catheter. You got the nursing staff should have noticed this long before, and they damn sure should have noticed it before a fly laid eggs in that infection and they could see maggots going inside of his penis. I mean, the level of neglect in that situation is astounding. It's astounding. The second individual,
same facility.
The second report from this state agency is that there was an individual who escaped the facility, and that they failed to give him adequate supervision. They failed to give him adequate monitoring, and that he got out more than once, and that. That his son is the one who found him at a nearby restaurant, and that the nursing home didn't even know he was gone, right? And this is, this is the kind of situation where, I point out the unforgivable statements that these nurses are making about this man's catheter. And I'll point out now the fact that the staff failed to notice that this nursing home resident was gone. The second one.
Yeah.
It's still not the staff that I blame, though. It's these individuals who aren't spending, who own these places, the corporations, which are individuals according to Citizens United. So they're. These corporations and the owners of them who own these places that are not spending money on adequate staffing or training for their staff that allow these things to happen. And this is, oddly enough, also a state, Arkansas, that has attempted numerous times, and even last year they tried this, to pass legislation that put a cap on non-economic damages, so pain and suffering.
And that's what's the interesting part of this article ends up, is that this it's talking about this company, this facility is owned by Skyline Highland Holdings, okay? And they have several corporations in Arkansas that own or manage nursing facilities with a total of 21 across the country. So again, we know whose bread is butter with the legislatures, legislators in Arkansas. So it says lawmakers, attorneys, and others were also hesitant to voice their opinion on Thursday against the nursing home, mostly because of the looming tort reform issue in 2018. Business leaders across Arkansas are pushing for limits to payouts in certain lawsuits. They want voters to pass a constitutional amendment in next year's midterm election that would cap non-economic compensatory damages in lawsuits. A similar push centered just around medical lawsuits was thrown off of last year's ballot. So something that's important, when you hear constitutional amendment, what that means is that there will be little to no ability for the judiciary to strike down a law, because now it's in the Constitution.
Yeah,
it's a function of our democracy and how the Arkansas government is set up.
Yeah, the judicial branch's job, you know, they certainly go outside of the scope sometimes, it seems. For both sides, whether conservative or liberal, anytime a judge doesn't do exactly what you want, you consider them an activist judge. But the judicial branch's job is to correspond laws with either the federal constitution or the state constitution. So if you pass an amendment to a state constitution or a federal constitution, and it's now in the constitution, it's in the constitution. Right. The only thing that they can do at that point, I guess, is judicial review still applies to see if that constitutional amendment in and of itself is unconstitutional.
No, I mean that's like DEFCON 5. Like it's on me impossible.
No. It's nearly impossible.
This is
It'd have to be a constitutional amendment that said, you know, women are no longer considered human. If you somehow manage to get Congress to pass that, but passing a cap on non-economic damages, that's never going to be overturned if it gets into the Constitution. And think about this: these lawmakers are willing to push legislation that puts a cap on pain and suffering. But where are they in saying, "Hey, guys, you can make all the money that you want, but you better have an adequate staffing number"? They're silent on that because they're getting money from these special interests. And it's just, remember, I mean, this is something that is bipartisan, because whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you have loved ones who are elderly, and you, unless you are a vampire, are going to get old one day and face the possibility of being one of these residents in a nursing home. So it affects all of us.
That's right. Unless you're a vampire.
Unless you're a vampire.
Speaking of vampires, Will, as a teenager and in early adulthood, loved the author Anne Rice. He loved the book The Vampire Lestat, and he actually boycotted the movie when it came out, Interview with the Vampire, because he says that it wasn't true to the novel. He celebrates Anne Rice's birthday every year. These are all things that he's told me. It's not like I'm making these things up.
Of course not. So, why would Rob ever make up anything about my backstory?
So the only thing he loves more than Anne Rice is slam poetry.
Oh,
so just letting everybody out there know that. But anyway, with that, we have, I think, reached the conclusion of this particular episode. So if you can get out there and enjoy the fall, the autumn foliage.
Yeah.
This is going to be another one for Dennis Ting, the transcriber, to worry about. But anyway, we've enjoyed having you. Thanks for listening. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.